Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning and welcome to Africa Link, coming to you live from Deutsche Welle in Bonn, Germany. I am Abubakar Jallo. Coming up, Burkina Faso issues an international arrest warrant for ousted leader Blaise Compaoré, accused of playing a role in the death of former President Thomas Sankara.
The people of Burkina Faso have made it clear that they want to know who did it, with what motive, and that they get to pay for what they did.
Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari presents a $30 billion budget to the National Assembly for approval. What do Nigerians think about this?
The country now is in a situation of this insecurity. By presenting this budget, at least we know what the president will be planning to do for the country.
What I really look forward to is security.
And the UN's children's agency, UNICEF, says the Boko Haram insurgency in northeastern Nigeria and neighboring countries has forced more than 1 million children out of school.
Over 2,000 schools are still closed in 4 countries around the Lake Chad region.
Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
Burkina Faso has issued an international arrest warrant for ousted leader Blaise Compaoré, accused of playing a role in the death of former President Thomas Sankara nearly 30 years ago. Sankara's body was exhumed earlier this year, and an autopsy report showed it was riddled with bullets. This supports earlier theories that Sankara was executed in the 1987 coup that brought Compaoré to power. Compaoré was also ousted last October by a popular uprising opposing his bid to change the constitution and extend his 27-year rule. He fled to neighboring country Ivory Coast, where he is thought to be based. Our West Africa correspondent Bram Postumus joins me now on the line from the capital Ouagadougou. Bram, what are Burkinabe saying now about the arrest warrant issued for Compaoré?
Well, they've been saying what they always have been saying ever since, and even before the time that Blaise Compaoré got removed from power by popular power, by people power. They've been saying that they want justice, and they want those who are responsible for these crimes, the killing of Thomas Sankara, but also the killing of investigative journalist Norbert Zongo, who was killed in 1998 in December, and all those crimes committed close to those of the Blaise Compaoré government. All these people need to be brought to justice. The people of Burkina Faso have made it clear that they want to know who did it, with what motive, and that they get to pay for what they did.
Has the family of Thomas Sankara been making any statement yet?
As far as I'm aware, no. Usually what happens is that they make statements about these matters through their family lawyer, who is also a Sankara, although not a relative. Failed presidential candidate Benoende Sankara, who is also a lawyer. They have been looking for and finding evidence about how he was killed. There is one crucial element missing, and that element constitutes the DNA sample. And there is still some uncertainty about whether the body found in that grave is actually Thomas Sankara's.
A family lawyer also said earlier on Monday that a team of French investigators had failed to identify a DNA from samples of a corpse which they presumed to be Sankara. Has that DNA now been confirmed?
No, that will happen this week. The latest I've heard is that this will happen tomorrow, so we'll have to keep a keen eye on the news coming out of this whole procedure and what the authorities here in Burkina Faso have to say about the actual DNA sample. And obviously, this is an extremely sensitive subject that needs to be handled with great, great cleverness and deftness.
Now, Ivory Coast has not responded as to whether they would extradite Compaoré to Burkina Faso. Do you foresee any diplomatic spat between these two West African nations?
At the most fundamental level, I think it is a matter between the personal relationships between President-elect Kabore and the recently re-elected president of Cote d'Ivoire, Alassane Ouattara. Although you have to admit that Ouattara there has a loyalty problem because Blaise Compaoré is also his old friend. But at the end of the day, I think what will prevail, and that is specifically electorally important for Kabore himself and his party now in power, or at least having the majority in parliament, is that they must be seen to be doing the will of the Burkinabe people. And that is abundantly clear. The Burkinabe people want justice.
Yes, Burkinabes want justice, but Alassane Ouattara, as you mentioned there, has he hinted that he has any intention of sending Compaoré back to Burkina Faso?
There is a second element that might make it a little bit easier for Ouattara to ease Blaise Compaoré into the Burkinabe justice system. And that is, of course, the failed September coup here in Burkina Faso, in which old stalwarts, especially in the military of the Compaoré regime, were involved. But also someone he is quite willing to cut loose, a certain person by the name of Guillaume Soro, who is the president of the Ivorian Parliament and has been sailing into some very, very choppy waters over his alleged involvement with this coup.
Our West Africa correspondent Brampos Tumos speaking on the line there from Ouagadougou. Meanwhile, many African intellectuals view Thomas Sankara as a visionary. When he took power in the coup in 1983, he pursued a Marxist philosophy and pan-Africanism, which led him to be called Africa's Che Guevara. Blaise Compaoré served under Sankara and the two were close friends. Sankara died in October 1987 during the coup that brought Compaoré to power. So was there any indication that Compaoré may have had a hand in the death of Sankara? James Amadeka, a political commentator, also joins me now from the line in Ouagadougou.
Investigations are still ongoing. This is just an accusation. So nothing is confirmed yet. And I think this investigation did not start now. It started a couple of weeks ago, and some people have already been implicated.
Now, Blaise Compaoré was a friend and former comrade in arms with Thomas Sankara. Why do many people sort of assume that he may have a hand in the death of his friend?
Probably he wanted the power. That is number one. He wanted the power at the time. Because you will agree with me that there are some ethnic groups over here which believe that they are capable of ruling a country. And at the time, there were pressure from some majority groups. They didn't see why a person from the minority should be ruling. I think it could also be along that line.
So to clarify what you're saying there, that Sankara comes from an ethnic minority group, whereas Compaoré comes from an ethnic majority group. Do you think he opposed, he did not think someone from a small ethnic city should rule Burkina Faso?
Exactly. That was a speculation at the time, that it must be a pressure from this majority group on him as a member of that majority group to take over the helm of affairs. Even though Compaoré did not show any kind of opposition to the ideologies of Thomas Sankara, I don't believe that there could be some differences which he could not voice out openly, which must be the underneath cause for the overthrow.
Interim authorities are preparing to hand over power to former Prime Minister Roch-Marc Kabore, who is the winner of the November presidential election. Do you think Kabore might go after Compaoré, given his past with the ousted president?
Yes, he will be compelled to do so. And I think that is the reason why he has to listen to the people. And the voice of the people right now is that let Compaoré must be brought to trial.
James Amadeka, a political commentator in Ouagadougou.
News, analysis, and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari has presented a $30 billion US dollar budget to the National Assembly. In his presentation, Buhari stressed that Nigeria must reduce its dependence on oil before it can return its economy to greatness. From Abuja, Ben Chemang filed this report.
It is President Buhari's first budget plan since he assumed office in May. The 30 billion euro budget is the highest in Nigeria's history, and it comes at a time when the price of crude oil, which is the country's main foreign exchange earner, continues to decline. Nigeria intends to export about 2.2 million barrels of crude oil per day, and each barrel will cost an estimated 30 euros. President Buhari presented the budget with an estimated price of crude oil standing at 30 euros per barrel. but the price of this precious commodity is gone down by about 25 euros per barrel. This puts the budget in jeopardy. But Senator Udo Udoma Udo, who is the Minister of Budget and National Planning, says the budget can be financed by other means.
One, we're looking at trying to get increasing our non-oil revenue. You know, we're looking at trying to get more money from the government, various government agencies, policing their collection and trying to get more money from them. We'll also look at keeping down our recurrent budget. That means that we'll look at savings that we can make from overheads. We'll also look at efficiencies from our revenue collecting agencies in terms of companies' income tax, and then the difference we will have to borrow.
This budget is presented when there are fuel queues at petrol stations in virtually all the states of Nigeria due to scarcity of fuel. Many Nigerians are worried and disturbed as prices of basic goods have doubled. This is how Nigerians have reacted to this budget.
Well, it's an achievement to the country. At least presenting the budget will tell us the picture of what will happen next year. For example, the country now is in a situation of this insecurity. By presenting this budget, at least we know what the president will be planning to do for the country.
Well, for us, more especially from the Northeast, what I really look forward to is security, real security, not temporary security, permanent one. And then I'm looking forward to see the end of fluctuating electricity, fuel scarcity, and all these queues. I hope it's going to be a very big thing for Nigeria.
I would like to see the budget translated into better infrastructure, good roads, reduce fuel queues in filling stations, and then improve security situations in the country.
President Buhari told the lawmakers that while implementing the budget, all stolen funds will be recovered no matter how long it takes and how far it is hidden. He went on to give areas where he will pay attention to in order to develop the country.
This is a fulfillment of our promise to align expenditure with our long-term objectives and a sign of government's commitment to sustainable development. This increased capital expenditure commits significant resources to critical sectors such as works, power, housing, 433.4 billion, transport, 202 billion naira, social intervention programs, 200 billion naira, defense, 134.6 billion naira, and interior, 53.1 billion naira.
In Nigeria, past budgets have often been spent on recurrent expenditure, in other words, paying of workers and government officials' financial entitlements. But the case of 2016 is witnessing a change as capital expenditure is more than recurrent expenditure. Buhari's government believes that it will hasten development for Nigerians who are seriously in need of availability of infrastructure.
Ben Chemang reporting from Abuja.
Behind the headlines.
Now, Mali is one of the youngest countries in the world with an average age of 16 years. This makes it difficult for young Malians to hold higher offices. But despite these challenges, the country's parliament now has a very youthful vice president, Amadou Thiam. Elected first as an MP 2 years ago, Thiam is bringing change in his country by motivating young Malians to climb up the political ladder. This report by Madeline Maya is now presented by Privilege Moshaniri.
In 2013, Amadou Thiam was elected to parliament. He was then only 29 years, making him the youngest lawmaker. 2 years after getting into politics, Thiam formed his own party known as ADP Maliba. He says he wants to bring a generation change in parliament through his party. His political career has moved even further. Today, he is vice president of Mali's parliament. His rapid success has not only made him friends, but also a number of enemies.
Honestly, I have been a victim of my outspokenness. My sincere analysis of governance issues has made me have enemies.
Born in Commune 5, constituents in Bamako, Amadou Thiam studied administration and finance in Ghana and France. After completing his studies, he started a communication agency in Bamako. In 2012, when his country plunged into crisis following occupation of the northern part by Islamist extremists, he decided not to watch from a distance but get into the country's leadership.
For us, it was the end of Mali. We have seen what these terrorists and drug smugglers have done in Timbuktu and Gao, where they took control for several months. They have chopped people's hands off and robbed them. One could no longer talk of democracy. Mali was in chaos.
Before Amadou Thiam got into politics, Moussa Diawara was the youngest member of parliament. He says Thiam's style of leadership is different.
He's a quiet man. That is very important. Personally, I'm more impulsive. For example, I'm a hothead. That's also part of being young. But he expresses himself differently. He tells the truth. He fulfills his duty with tranquility and sincerity.
Once in a while, Amadou Thiam finds time to meet his electorate to discuss issues that affect the people. Thiam says he strives to maintain a close relationship with his electorate.
We often meet here with our friends. We greet each other and chit-chat a bit. They need to understand we are with them, and we have not changed.
For now, his party has only 4 representatives in parliament. He hopes to get more seats come the next general election.
That report was written by Madeleine Meyer. Now, the Boko Haram insurgency in northeastern Nigeria and neighboring countries has forced more than 1 million children out of school. This is according to a report released on Tuesday by the United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF. UNICEF says that more than 2,000 schools in Nigeria, Cameroon, Chad and Niger remain closed due to the conflict and hundreds have been looted, damaged or destroyed. My colleague Isaac Mugabe has been speaking to Laurent Duvillier, a communication specialist with UNICEF in West Africa.
UNICEF is extremely concerned because of the insecurity and the violence. We see that over 2,000 schools are still closed in 4 countries around the Lake Chad region. Some of them have been looted, others damaged or still occupied by people displaced and fleeing the violence. There is the fear factor. Many teachers are scared to give classes in areas that where they could still be at risk of attacks. Many parents are scared to send their own children to school, and that's understandable. And because of that, what we could see is that the schools are often either empty in the areas where there are risk or overcrowded in the refugee camps. And that's where we have a concern. We see that those children that are deprived from access to education are now not only in northern Nigeria, but more and more in northern Cameroon, Chad, and Niger. And those children that have now difficulties to go back to schools are not only those that were displaced by the violence, but also those in the hosting communities where displaced people have found shelter and occupied schools.
Now, what impact is this likely to have on the children that have been deprived of education?
Those are the most vulnerable children. Those are the poorest children in the world. We are talking about the countries that before the crisis had already a very staggering number of children out of school. Over 11 million children were out of school before the crisis. And now on that, we add another million. That means that it's extremely concerning. Very clearly, those children are among the poorest. Education for those children were the only way, one of the only few chances that they could break the cycle of exclusion, poverty, and violence. And now, because of the conflict, this only chance they had to get out of poverty is lost. And for sometimes forever, for some of those children that have been away from school for more than a year, the risk that they will drop drop out of school forever is very high. So we need to do all we can, and there are many possibilities, to provide access to a certain kind of education, either within the school or outside the school, without exposing those children to risk.
And how about those children living now in refugee camps? How can you describe their situation?
Well, I can tell you the real story of a child that I met in a refugee camp in Chad a few months ago. And it's a very positive story, and that tells you the impact, the positive impact of education. It's a Nigerian child that fled the violence, and he witnessed atrocities and faced insecurity along the way, crossed the border into Chad, and I met him in a refugee camp in Chad along the border with Nigeria. Fortunately, he was able, together with UNICEF, to go back to Nigeria. We were able to trace and identify where the parents were and to reunite him with his family. And on the top of that, a few weeks ago, I had the very positive news that we were able to reintegrate him in an existing school in Maiduguri, northern Nigeria. So that's a positive news that tells you that we can do something. There are many things we can do. Either we can reintegrate some of the displaced children in existing school systems in areas where it's safe. That's one possibility. Another possibility in the refugee camps is to open what we call a temporary learning space. It's not a school, but that provides learning opportunities for refugee children. And the last one is to slowly, gradually, where it's possible, reopen schools in the areas that are now secured. And for that, we need to provide incentives and provide materials to both children and the teachers. It's not possible everywhere, but where it's possible, it's great, and we need to do that. One of the major problems that we are facing is the lack of financial resources. Just to give you an example, we are just 1 week away from the closure of this year. And at this stage, UNICEF has only received 44% of the funding that we needed this year to provide support to those four countries affected by the conflict from Boko Haram. So it's really concerning. We need to make sure that we get the resources to be able to provide support to those children. Otherwise, they're at risk of dropping out of school. An entire generation will be sacrificed.
Laurent Duvalier, a communication specialist with UNICEF in West Africa.
Opinion.
And for our opinion segment this week, we go back to our top story. We've heard that Burkina Faso issued an international arrest warrant for ousted leader Blaise Compaoré. Compaoré is accused of playing a role in the death of former President Thomas Sankara nearly 30 years ago. We now ask, could Blaise Compaoré have played a role in the death of Thomas Sankara in 1987? Send us your opinion by email to feedback.africa@dw.com and SMS to country code 49160957595 10 or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany.
Harare, Nairobi, or Abuja, Africa Link's correspondents bring Africa's stories to you.
A reminder now of our main stories before we leave you. Burkina Faso has issued an international arrest warrant for ousted leader Blaise Compaoré. Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari has presented a $30 billion US dollar budget to the National Assembly. The UN's children's agency UNICEF has said that the Boko Haram insurgency in northeastern Nigeria and neighboring countries has forced more than 1 million children out of school. There, we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. Do join us again at the same time tomorrow. And as always, thank you for listening. My name is Abubakar Jallo, reporting from Bonn in Germany. Bye for now.